Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Hi, everybody. Let's begin today by just replaying that clip of Mayor Bloomberg that Richard just heard in the news. We're going to talk about this. Listen to what the mayor said about the Kingsbridge Armory deal going down.
Unfortunately, that building will probably be vacant for a long time into the future, and those jobs have just gone away. And it's really sad because if you look at the unemployment rate in the Bronx, it's, I think, the highest of any county in the state.
And one of the highest in America. Community leaders in the Northwest Bronx and labor advocates citywide made their choice. They killed the Kingsbridge Armory shopping mall plan because they failed to win agreement for a living wage for mall employees. It would have been about $11 an hour compared to the minimum wage of around $7. Mayor Bloomberg, angry, disappointed in that clip, may not hold the political sway he once did either. You know, this is the first Bloomberg rezoning plan that city council has defeated in his entire administration, all 8 years, and they defeated it 45-1. So let's talk about the Kingsbridge defeat now and put it in the context of how the development landscape has changed in New York in general. In 2009, it was arguably a watershed year for development in the city, and not necessarily for the better. Lots of people on various sides of various projects are very disappointed, and of course the economy is changing the landscape altogether. Joining me first are Bronx Borough President Ruben Diaz Jr., one of the leaders of the opposition to Kingsbridge without a living wage. Also joining me is WNYC's Matthew Sherman. He's been covering all the big development projects in the city, as many of you know, hearing his voice on these things all year. And we'll talk about the status of some of those other projects like the Broadway Triangle and Atlantic Yards in Brooklyn. Hi, Matthew.
Hi, Brian.
And Borough President Diaz, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. It's good to be back, Brian.
Borough President, the project promised 1,200 permanent jobs, 1,000 construction jobs. The unemployment rate is 10% in the city, higher in the Bronx. Do you have no ambivalence about this?
I'm proud of the Bronx delegation for standing up on such a strong principled issue. And I want to thank Speaker Quinn and all of the other city council members for voting in the best interest of the Bronx. Look, this is not the result that we wanted. We wanted the Kingsbridge Armory developed, but we felt that we gave and submitted a reasonable CBA to relate it to the city of New York. And hopefully what this vote did is sends the message that we are going to change the way business is done in the Bronx, the way that business should be done in the city of New York, where we continue to subsidize corporate barons and do so in a way where we continue to perpetuate poverty. And so when someone says that you lost 1,000 construction jobs, no one can assure me that those 1,000 jobs or a good percentage of them are going to be given to people who live in the borough. And the 1,200 jobs, these are what we wanted to do is to ensure a living wage because we know that in this economic climate, we continue to give goodies to multimillionaires and billionaires like Related, and yet there's very little benefit to the surrounding community. So we understand that we have the highest poverty rate in the Bronx and we want to get out of it. And so if Related is going to get sweetheart deals or if corporate America is, then the surrounding and local community should benefit as well. And that's why so many people have been supportive.
So I get that you think this was subsidizing corporate barons while perpetuating poverty. What could happen with the Kingsbridge Armory now? You heard Mayor Bloomberg in that clip predict that this will sit there now for another 30 years. It's been sitting there vacant for some 15, and the city pays $1 million a year to maintain it. What happens next, if anything, for the Kingsbridge Armory?
Well, we're hoping to partner with the mayor. He needs to realize that we are his partners in government, that under the last RFP for the Armory, this was something that was dictated to us as if the mayor and the administration and other folks who don't live in the Bronx know what's good for the Bronx. We hope to offer things. Perhaps we can have some type of green initiative there where we can have a manufacturer of green material, where we can have some type of office space, community space. There's so many different things things. We want to come back to the table. I don't really subscribe to that notion that it will sit vacant for so many years. I hope that the mayor, this administration, sits with the elected officials, with the community in the Bronx, and I think that we can put something together and put out an RFP very soon.
Bronx Borough President Ruben Diaz, WNYC's Matthew Sherman, and you, if you live in the Bronx, our first call out today is going to go for Bronx listeners. Bronx residents, what do you think of the council and your borough president rejecting this development project? Was it a trade-off that was the right fight to pick, the right line to draw in the sand, subsidizing corporate barons? Because this would be another taxpayer-subsidized development project, while perpetuating poverty, as the borough president puts it? Or would you rather have people have the opportunity to get their foot in the door at the minimum wage as it exists under the law for some of these jobs in the stores that would have been built in the mall? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Call us up right now if you live in the Bronx. And you can post on our website as well, of course, at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. Matthew Sherman, is this a watershed moment for development and labor in the city? Is this the precedent that's now been established that for any rezoning or any major development that's going to go forward, they're going to try to use it as a hook to get the living wage as opposed to the minimum wage established in New York City?
It's the beginnings of exactly that sort of movement here, but I would say it's far from precedent at this point. The mayor made comments last Friday when he first spoke out against this living wage idea, and basically said no deal on the Kingsbridge Armory. And he said he doesn't want to see these things called community benefits agreements. He doesn't believe in dictating to not just this developer in the Bronx, but any developer on city-owned land or city-assisted projects, what wages they have to pay their employees. So it really seems like both the city council and Mayor Bloomberg have drawn lines in the sand about this issue, and it's going to be a tug of war for the next 4 years.
Borough President, do you see this as a turning point for development in New York? Is this the new standard that you and others should set for any development projects going forward?
I surely hope so. I see that in the New York Times a couple of days ago, it was reported that Peter Dreyer, professor of politics and urban policy from Occidental College in Los Angeles, reported that over 200 cities in the country have a type of ordinance where if you're getting public dollars, then you should provide a living wage. And so I hope that this has opened up that dialogue, that we support legislation that's put forward by members of the Bronx and the council, Councilwoman Annabel Palmer, Oliver Coppell, so that in the future, if you are a developer and you're willing to put your own money, then you could pay minimum wage. But if you're going to get millions and millions of dollars of public dollars, then you have a responsibility to provide a living wage.
And Matthew, is this a big turning point for Mayor Bloomberg? His development projects always pass in city council. His many, many, many rezonings. I asked him about rezoning in the mayoral debate with Bill Thompson on television in October and here on WNYC. Every one of those rezonings has passed city council over 8 years. This one went down 45-1. Is it indicative of something larger with respect to Mayor Bloomberg's power?
Sure. I think a lot of the media is seeing this as the city council standing up to the mayor for the first time in 8 years. And Charles Barron, a city council member who's been trying to stand up for the past 8 years, mentioned that on the floor of the city council on Monday, that he was finally happy. He and Tony Avella were finally happy to be voting in the majority against the mayor. That said, you know, a lot of that has to do with the mayor's fairly narrow victory in November for re-election, and perhaps that the city council members themselves are lame duck. They have four more years to go. They don't think they're going to win a fourth term.
Not another extension of term limits.
And it also has to do with the fact that this coalition that built up around the Armory was extraordinary, given all the other coalitions that have tried to come together and battle development. They were very smart from the get-go. Borough President Diaz lent his voice to that movement, joined that movement. We've never seen a borough president really stand up with anti, I shouldn't say anti-development, but with development critics, labor unions, not just construction trades unions or 32BJ service workers unions, but actually retail workers unions who are sort of the poor cousin of the group here in the way that borough president Diaz did.
Let's hear from some of our Bronx listeners. David, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling, David.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make two points. One, I agree with the tension between trying to create a living wage and, on the other hand, trying to decrease unemployment. What I hope, though, is that we can use this as a constructive precedent to find sort of creative ways to elevate people from poverty. If the city can't do a living wage, maybe they can help out with benefits like providing health care for all people. This is just one of the ways that we might be able to see how we can sort of change the socioeconomic demographics that exist here in the Bronx. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for making it. Call again. Lisa in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lisa.
Oh, hello.
Turn your radio off, Lisa, okay?
Thank you. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes, I live in the Bronx. I've lived here for some time, and I'm familiar with this project because I worked for a city agency that was working on this back in the 90s. And at that time, under Mayor Giuliani, they were not particularly interested in listening to residents of the Bronx at the time who were pressing for part of the redevelopment to be a new school because schools were severely needed. But really what I want to say, this is a perfect opportunity to do a kind of creative industrial reuse and make it a destination place, not just another retail shopping mall, which there are many, many, many. Retail sales are dropping. They don't bring in that much money for the wage earners. I want to applaud and thank
Borough President Diaz
for standing up for us.
Lisa, let me ask why you counterpose those as against each other. I mean, it's one thing to pressure the school system to place more schools in the neighborhood, perfectly understandable. But what does that have to do with whether or not a shopping mall also goes in the Kingsbridge Armory? You want a school, you also want jobs, right?
I want to give you an example. G-Town, Gasometer Town in Vienna. It was an old set of four large storage tanks for gas. It was an industrial area. It was completely empty, nothing. They turned it into a fabulous office building, a retail center that's one of the major retail places in Vienna, Austria.
Mm-hmm.
They put office building, they put a school there. They put a bioscience park. They put new apartments along with a very significant retail shopping mall. And it's a major destination for people in the whole metro area.
Lisa, thank you for your call.
Can I jump in, President Diaz?
Go ahead.
Yeah, first of all, again, when they say that there's a loss of jobs, I think it's a farce to think that we will even get 50% of the initial construction jobs. We've seen construction go up. We've seen development go up in the Bronx to the tune of hundreds and if not billions of dollars, and it's really done nothing for the economy of the borough, for the local resident. So that's one. Two, think about this for a minute. When folks say, well, the economy and you need job creation, well, there was no guarantee that Bronxites were going to get those jobs. But those Bronxites who would have gotten jobs, they were going to get paid part-time salaries at a minimum wage. That coupled with poor people buying the product for rich people who were being subsidized by public dollars, that doesn't make sense. And then what we also need to keep into account that this mall would have hurt jobs in Fordham Row, which is the second biggest retail strip in the city of New York. So we would have lost jobs there. I agree with Lisa that this is the perfect opportunity.
You think that the North Bronx can't support both? I guess you're talking about the shopping hub around the Grand Concourse and Fordham Road, all of that, right?
Yes.
Where there are some of the same national chain stores that maybe would have gone into the Kingsbridge Armory. You don't think there are enough shoppers in the Bronx to support both of those things?
Well, I know that there are many people that perhaps in the summer months, because of air conditioning, would have preferred to go to the mall. During winter months, during the cold days, would have went to the mall. So we would have lost a lot of jobs on Fordham Row. And again, here we are. It's amazing how a lot of folks who oppose what the council did on Monday are either people who don't live in the borough or make way more than a living wage. And then they're telling us what's good for us. And not realizing that for every action there's a reaction, and we would have lost jobs in Fordham Row.
Is it best to fight on a case-by-case, development-by-development process? or basis for the living wage? Are you better off going through city council or the state legislature and trying to get enacted as city or state policy?
Well, this was draining. And so obviously it took a lot of hours and a lot of conversation. And yes, that's what we're hoping for now, that as we move forward, that there is legislation by the city council and or the state legislature. When I was in Albany, you know, I was an assemblyman up there. Mm-hmm. The assembly voted. It was a one-house bill on IDA reform. And the Senate, which was Republican-controlled at the time, never took it up. Governor Patterson said that he's in favor of having some type of IDA reform. And I'm hoping when the new session comes about now that they do not only introduce it but pass state legislation that would deal with this in the future.
And are you afraid now that no other developers are going to come and build in the Bronx because they're not going to want to go through what the related company just went through?
Not at all. I think the Bronx is booming, and developers realize that, and it's just us sending a message that if you want to do business, we want you to do it here, but you also have to do it with us. You have to do it in partnership with the elected officials, the community boards, and the surrounding community. And so as long as people want to do business the right way, we're open for business.
All right. Bronx Borough President Ruben Diaz, thank you very much for coming on with us again.
Thank you, and happy holidays.
To you, too. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Our development reporter, Matthew Sherman, is still with us. And, Matthew, we're going to bring in another guest right now, and that is Daniel Goldstein, as we move from the Bronx down to Brooklyn. He is leading the charge against the Atlantic Yards development project through his organization, Develop, Don't Destroy. Daniel Goldstein, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian.
Does Kingsbridge have any relationship in any way to the fight you're fighting for Atlantic Yards, against Atlantic Yards development?
I think so. I think a number of the development fights going on around the city are all related to each other. And in this one specifically, I think the mayor said something like, we're not going to be able to have living wage jobs or enforce them. Well, then there's a question about what the jobs at the Atlantic Yards project, particularly the arena, are going to be. Are they going to be living wage jobs? So that particular part of the discussion is absolutely related. There's one big difference between the two projects, and the reason we saw what happened with Kingsbridge is that went through the city council. It went through the ULURP process. The Atlantic Yards project did not, meaning there was no room for any sort of negotiation like went on there.
ULURP means Universal Land Use Review Process, which the point being is that it's a city process. And this was kind of an up or down vote on something that was going to take place or not in the city by city council. Ratner got people to go around that process with respect to Atlantic Yards and have it go through various state agencies and things like that. So, Matthew Sherman, do you think that Kingsbridge sets a precedent for the city? Is this going to make developers look twice before coming to the Bronx or anywhere else? And what do you see as the citywide implications for what just happened in city council with respect to the Bronx?
Right now, Bloomberg is still on the side of the developers, and Bloomberg and his mayoral agencies are really the ones that bring in the developers to ask them to bid on city-owned sites. On Willits Point, for example, which is one of the next areas to be developed. I don't think we will see the same type of fight over that because it's already been rezoned, for example. However, when it comes time for the next raw parcel to be rezoned to make way for retail, it's really hard to say. Kingsbridge is actually a very thriving middle-class area, and the people who lived around there could afford to say no to development that they didn't like. There was also a vacuum in the city council leadership for that district, actually. There was the outgoing council member was ill and was not able to be involved one way or other. She had been in favor of Yankee Stadium, for example. She had been in favor of the Bronx Terminal Market. When I asked Joel Rivera, who is the majority leader for the city council and a Bronx councilman who was also very pro-Yankee Stadium and pro-Bronx Terminal Market. That's another shopping mall in the South Bronx. You know, what was so different? He said, well, Kingsbridge was a healthier area. So I find it very hard to believe. We'll have to see, but I'll find it very hard to believe that the city council would stall further development over living wage.
And what a year it has been for development controversies in New York City. Daniel Goldstein, your main legal claim, at least the one that's gotten the most press attention against the Atlantic Yards project, is that the state is using the power of eminent domain inappropriately in this instance. That claim was rejected by the courts, but the Columbia University expansion project was dealt a blow by the Court of Appeals, which upheld the claim that eminent domain use was inappropriate in West Harlem. Do you think the Columbia victory, I'm getting my parties mixed up, the neighborhood people who went to court against Columbia using eminent domain, do you think how eminent domain was struck down in the Columbia case will come back and help you take your claim back to court?
Well, May, I just need to correct you. The owners in Harlem, they won in the appellate division just below the Court of Appeals. I wish they had won in the Court of Appeals. Their case is going to go to the High Court probably early next year. And yes, the substantive issues in their case and our case are the same when it comes to the state finding blight for a site chosen by a developer or a university. In that case, the state finding blight years after the developer says they want to do the project. The judge in that case who wrote the opinion called their blight finding that the neighborhood is blighted and needs to be removed idiocy and sophistry. The judge talked about underutilization, the folly of underutilization as a criteria exhibiting blight. And the same consultant paid to find that blight study, who was excoriated in this Columbia opinion, is the same consultant paid by Forest City Ratner to find blight for the Atlantic Yards project. So the issues, the big issues in the two cases are very similar. And what we've done is we have filed a motion for re-argument with the Court of Appeals, and we've asked them to hold their decision on that motion until they come down on the Columbia case, which they will have to do. We can't have the Court of Appeals have contradictory opinions on how what blight means in New York State and how much deference is paid to the state agencies.
Matthew Sherman, you have a question for Daniel Goldstein.
Hi, Daniel. The appellate division decision is a complicated one. It's a 3-2 decision by the panel, but you have two judges who signed one opinion that did attack the Empire State Development Corporation for mere sophistry and called the justification for blight or the termination of blight idiocy, an example of idiocy. But then you had a third judge to make up that majority who ruled on technical grounds. So it was sort of a 2-1-2 decision. And I'm sort of wondering, you know, what do you guys make of that? How strong do you think that a 2-1-2 decision like that can be for setting precedent that can be applied to other eminent domain cases like yours?
Well, we're going to have to see what the Court of Appeals says, meaning are they going to be convinced by those two who really slammed what Columbia and ESDC had done? If they're going to look at the record and decide that that court was right, then I think that would have widespread ramifications for how Empire State Development Corporation acts in bad faith when doing eminent domain condemnation. And yeah, it is a complicated decision. The Court of Appeals could rule in any number of ways on pieces of that decision, and that'll have to be seen. But we hope that they'll rule in the affirmative on the big issues of basically bogus blight being used to justify eminent domain.
Daniel Goldstein, at what point do you run out of options and have to give up the fight? I think for the casual listener that doesn't really follow the Atlantic Yards controversy, they might feel like they've heard 20 different decisions over the last few years that have gone the developer's way, and yet along comes another court appeal or another state agency to ask, what's the end of the road?
When the legal avenues are extinguished, that will be the end of the road, maybe. I think there's a political solution to be had that should be had in the coming weeks. The Governor Patterson, has publicly stated that he will undertake an objective review of the project. Now, that review won't mean anything if he doesn't intervene by stopping what appears to be an imminent closing on the project and imminent start of the process to take people's homes and businesses. And, you know, this, as we discussed earlier, this is a state project. The governor controls what goes on here. And this is a governor putting out fiscal fires all over the place. Yet this is a project that the state has yet to give $100 million to that they promised. The MTA yesterday passed these service cuts. yet they took $80 million off the table that they were supposed to get from Forest City Ratner. The governor needs to decide if this project, which today appears to be nothing more than an arena, maybe a building or two, and acres of parking lots, if that's what he bargained for, if that's what Governor Pataki bargained for, if that's a project that they would have passed if that's what they were sold today. Because the project that could move forward does not provide the benefits whatsoever, particularly about affordable housing, that have been approved or promised. There are actually guarantees that allow Ratner to get out from building, to get out of building most of the proposed affordable housing.
Daniel
and
Goldstein,
that's what the project's supposed to be about.
Still fighting the Atlantic Yards Project with Develop, Don't Destroy Brooklyn. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And WNYC's Matthew Sherman. Before you go, just a big picture question. I mean, what a year 2009 has been, with cranes on pause all over the city, halted development all over the city, the opposite eminent domain rulings for Atlantic Yards and Columbia University in West Harlem, Coney Island, Broadway Triangle, now Kingsbridge. Does anything tie this all together as the year of the something in New York City development?
It's a year of transition, of contradictory messages, perhaps. I mean, one thing I would say is that people compare this recession to the Great Depression. The Great Depression was actually one of the great moments in American labor history. I think that helps explain why the Kingsbridge Armory movement got so much momentum. It might explain why there was a little bit of skepticism at the appellate division on the Columbia case. We'll have to see how the recession shakes out in order to see how precedent-setting all these different things are.
WNYC development correspondent Matthew Sherman. Matthew, thanks a lot.
Great. Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer in WNYC, and we'll check in on the health reform debate in Washington with Congressman Anthony Weiner next. Stay with us.